on the board of the New York Society Library, and I'm delighted to welcome you here on our 254th year. It's actually our 240th annual meeting because there were a number of years there where, unfortunately, we were not able to convene. I'd like to get through the business of the day first by calling for the election of a chairperson and secretary of the meeting. I'm honored to serve as chairperson, and Sarah Elliott Holliday is the secretary designate. If I could have a voice vote in favor of that slate. All in favor? Any opposed? No. Thank you. Hereby, as chair of the meeting, I guess, declare that the polls are open for election for the following six trustees for the class of 2011. Myself, Charles G. Berry, trustee since 1993. Lynn Chase, trustee since 1996. Henry Cooper, former chair and trustee since 1971. John K. Howitt, trustee since 2002. Jim Griffin, James Q. Griffin, trustee since 1984, and Jeanette Watson-Sanger, trustee since 1991. And I would like to name as inspectors of the election two designees that Sarah will advise me of. Okay, maybe Dan Rossner would like to rise to the occasion of being one of them, and a non-member?
Jane Goldstein.
Jane Goldstein, perhaps? Okay, thank you. These are our inspectors. The ballots have been distributed, or are being distributed, to those who have not already sent in their proxies. I think most people have sent in their proxies, but if any need a ballot, please raise your hand, and we will circulate those. So we'll just take a couple of minutes to do that. We will declare the results of the election very shortly, but I'd like to proceed to my chairman's report, which I will try to keep very brief and leave to Mark and our annual report a more detailed account. This has been, among other things, a banner year for the library on the philanthropy front. We have been delighted and honored to receive the wonderful gift from the Peluso family, after which our gallery here has been named. We have also received the exceptional gift from the trust of Jenny Hornblower's father, Marshall Hornblower, which is really unprecedented in its scope. We look forward to instituting the writers program that is a feature of that. We have also received many other generous gifts and bequests. This year, our annual appeal surpassed our goals. I think it may even be the largest success that we've had in our annual appeal ever. This philanthropy is so crucial to the health of our institution. It has been the basis for our success over the years. There have been times when the library was not in such great financial shape. If you read the history of the library for a good part of the 19th century, we were rather struggling. And indeed, it's one single gift, the gift of Sarah Goodhue, that is responsible for an enormous part of our endowment. It was proceeds from that gift that enabled us to buy the building that we're in now and fit it out with the stacks. So it's important for all of us to be mindful of how key philanthropy has been and will continue to be for us. One of the interesting features of our last year was that we had the first ever retreat of the board last November. We gathered down at the Sybil Library, the Science, Industry, and Business Library of the Public Library, and it was a very energizing occasion where we had presentations by staff members and very candid discussions among the board. I hope it's something that we will continue to do. It certainly made very plain to me what an exceptionally talented and dedicated staff we have. It also made plain to me some of the rather severe and significant needs that we have, in particular, space needs. One of the presentations that was made highlighted the fact that unless we find more space for our books, we have literally just two more years of growth room at our rate of, I think it's about 4,500 books a year that we have typically added to our collection. So we will be addressing issues of off-site storage, but we're very eager to achieve the goal of expanding physically, particularly if we can, to raise the funds that we need to accomplish the expansion on our sixth floor. We have a unique collection. It's very well selected. It's very well cared for. We have extremely popular and meaningful programs. We're extremely fortunate to have the exhibition space, including the display cases that Jeanette Watson-Sanger was so kind to donate, and that the Palusos have lent their name to the gallery to display. But if we are going to thrive and continue to meet the needs of our members, we need to raise more funds and approach our philanthropy in a dedicated way. Another milestone for us this year is that we hired for the first time a development director. I think you all know Joan Zimmet, who is here, but you might just stand, Joan, if you would, for those who don't know you. Joan has been a tremendous addition to our staff and is, I am confident, going to be key to our success in meeting the goals that we have set for ourselves. So we, you know, intend to approach this in a thoughtful and purposeful way, but it is very key. I like to think that we are one of the really bright stars in the firmament of New York cultural institutions, perhaps not as well known as some others, but truly distinguished in our history and in our present reality. One other aspect of the library that I'm particularly proud of is the fact that we have a public dimension. Some of you may have been at the speech here by Richard Wendorf of the Boston Athenaeum, and you may be aware that he edited a remarkable and beautiful book on American membership libraries. I think we are unique among those libraries. Which used to number 3,000 or more in the middle of the 19th century and have now dwindled to some 17 or 18, I believe it is. Richard, one of the features of our library that distinguishes us from those others is that we are open to the public for reference. And we are also very proud of our sponsorship of the outreach program Project Cicero, which Susan Robbins is a co-chair of, which has brought over a million books to New York City public school classrooms. To my view, these are a very important part of our public mission that I hope that we will continue. We do face challenges, both fiscally and physically. We also have the challenge of expanding the scope of our membership and the membership of our board. And we have set for ourselves a goal of achieving diversity among our board membership and our membership more broadly. And I would also very much hope that we can expand participation among younger members. So with all that said, I look forward to having all of your support as we achieve these goals, and I would like to simply recognize and thank the chairs of the various board committees who have been so energetic in their work and important to our success over this last year. Some of these board members are not present, unfortunately, but I'd still like to recognize them and mention them here. They include, in no particular order, the Building and Renovation Committee, chaired by Gene Pfeiffer, which, as you can appreciate, has been very instrumental in not just refurbishing this room and cleaning our facade, but planning for the future. Jeanette Sanger, who's the head of our Lecture and Exhibition Committee, which continues to have just wonderful programs both here and at Temple Israel. Our Book Committee, now chaired by Dan Rossner, who's filled the shoes of Benita Eisler, who I'm pleased to see with us here today. George Frelinghuysen for the Finance Committee, Ralph Brown for the Audit Committee. Those committees are perhaps a little less visible and recognized by others, but knowing the work that they do, I can assure you that it is tireless and extremely important. We are very lucky to continue to have a clean audit from our excellent outside auditors, and it takes a lot of work to go through all the financial papers to be sure that we are in good order. Connie Roosevelt is the head of our New York City Book Awards Committee, which will be presenting those awards on May 14, and I hope as many of you as possible can attend then. Lynn Mehta is the chair of two of our important committees, the Member Relations Committee and the Nominating Committee. And Susan Robbins actually is also chair of two committees, if you could call one of them a committee, which it really isn't, our Children's Library Committee, and as I mentioned, Project Cicero, which she co-chairs with Lorene Greenbaum, is it, and Silda Wall. Finally, I'd like to say a word of thanks and acknowledgement to Mark Bartlett and our entire staff who have done and continue to do such a wonderful job. Mark has really shown himself to have effective, quiet leadership. It's been a tremendous pleasure to work with him. He has put things on a very even keel, and I would like to thank him personally for his efforts and turn over the podium to him. Thank you.
Okay. Don't? Okay. Okay. As you can tell, we have a new sound system. It arrived on Monday, and this is our second evening using it, and I hope that's the last feedback for the next few minutes. Good evening. I'm glad that you could all be with us tonight, staff, trustees, shareholders, guests, and friends. It's wonderful to be here, and we can see our trees behind us, unfortunately not directly here, but from the other windows. One of the great occasions every year at the annual meeting is to have the trees in bloom outside. I hope you've all come with your minds, your hearts, and your appetites as well. We have some food and drink following the meeting. English poet, novelist, and jazz critic Philip Larkin wrote a lovely ode to a library, and I'll start tonight by sharing it with you. New eyes each year find old books here, and new books, too, old eyes renew. So youth and age, like eek and page, in this house join, minting new coin. Larkin, I'm happy to let you know, for those of you who don't know, he was also a librarian, and he worked at the University of Hull. And though he obviously had college students in mind as the new coin, I think we can borrow his words tonight. We all know that this library continues to stimulate the intellect and soothe the spirit of our many members of all ages. Tonight I'll make some remarks in six general areas, for those of you who are counting. Books and collections, members in library services, the children's library, events and programs, staff and trustees, and finally, looking ahead, a few thoughts about where we'll be going in the next couple of years. Our library collections are continuing to grow. In this last year, we added 55 audiobooks, and our audiobook collection is quite varied, works from Virgil, Warton, Trollope, through Dickens, Didion, and James, both Henry James and mystery writer P.D. James. Our audio policy continues to be to choose from both cassettes and compact discs, and to be selective rather than comprehensive. We do have to say downstairs, the public library will have that title, and we won't be buying it. Steve McGurl, our head of acquisitions, and his hardworking staff, Janet Howard and Carolyn Waters, continue to add many major sets to the library's permanent collection. This past year, they added the definitive works of Edmund Spenser and the new Dictionary of Scientific Biography, and also the Oxford History of Australia. Some sets of books that are in our stacks are like growing families. They bring along a few new volumes every few years. And in the past year, we've added to the collected letters of Joseph Conrad and the collected works of Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Members are also enjoying some new subscriptions to a few periodicals: Mystery Scene Magazine, Art Newspaper, The Believer, Travel and Leisure, The Chronicle of Philanthropy, The South Carolina Review, which was donated by our member Jean Frank, and Poetry, donated by Helen and Michael Goodkin. And just so you know, we do get periodical requests that we occasionally have to turn down, and this year's candidate was we turned down Sports Illustrated. Book donations totaled just shy of 800 titles this year, which is a long tradition of books being donated by our members. We've added some impressive rare and signed volumes donated to us by Romano Peluso, Jean Detry, Irene Schmid, and Judah Gerstein. And this year's published annual report, we'll hope to include some images from the books that were donated by these members. Laura O'Keefe has been with us for 1 year. She joined the staff last March, and she supervises the cataloging department. I wanted to take a moment to thank Laura for her steady hand and creative approach to managing the cataloging department and taking care of the work upstairs. If I may for a moment borrow Edmund Burke's words, "Good order is the foundation of all good things," then good order in our catalog is handled by the very capable cataloging staff and the five members of that staff: Laura, Erevik, Endung, Karen, and our assistants, Matthew and now Perry. Thanks to this team, we've completed about 4,500 titles in the last year. At last year's annual meeting, I told you about the generous financial support we received for the conservation and digitization of our library's first charging ledger. As a reminder, our ledger tracks the circulation activity in the library from the years 1789 through 1792. And it includes the books borrowed by such luminaries as George Washington, John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr, and more than 200 other library members. A very brief update: I get to hold a box up. And in this box is a microfilm version of our first ledger. We have also just received, yesterday, the return of the first ledger, and we'll be able to show it to people quite shortly once we have a chance to look at it. And we've also been working on the digital version of the ledger, and that will be released on the internet on our website. It's very exciting, and I really want to thank all the staff who have been involved with working on this project, including Ingrid Richter, George Munoz, Aravik Kaprilian, and other people who have helped us along. I do know that the ledger is going to be an important kind of opening into some new territory for the library, and it will be of great interest to researchers throughout the world. Our members continue to be very curious people. They continue to be very well-read, and they also continue to let us know what they want to read and also what they don't want to read. Biography, history, politics and government, the environment, poetry, philosophy, art and architecture, so many subject areas are represented in both our new books display and on the stack shelves. Perhaps there's no better way to understand the library's reading habits than to look at our monthly new books list, which is enjoyed by so many members. We continue to publish it in print, and we also continue to distribute it on the website. Some of you may not know that our library archives have rich holdings of our book lists going back to the 1880s. And tonight I brought a sample of some new book lists from the earlier part of the 20th century. I draw your attention to the ones from the 1940s, which are quite fascinating as they represent many of the subject areas I mentioned. But there's also a heading under war during the 1940s with purchasing that was happening during that period. Our members also come into our lobby with varied and sometimes surprising questions. Besides such very frequent questions as, do you own this book? Where are the travel guides for Italy? And give me another crime novel, but not as bloody as the last one. We've been asked for such things as photographs of Ingersoll, Ontario, and specifically for the period 1900 to 1910. Information about former congressman and current jail resident, James Traficant, and Christopher Columbus. We've also been asked how much Americans spend on exercise each year. We've been asked for images and the use of New York City in the movies. We've been asked for information on getting poetry published in literary magazines. And we've been asked for sources for starting the nanny business. Information about the appearance of trees in mythology, a list of books, book discussion groups here in New York City, and a very recent request for one of our members, anything and everything published about the Hudson Valley. This past year, we initiated the single membership category. And as Patrick Rayner, my circulation supervisor, noted in his annual report, many longtime members were able to reduce their annual fee, and many told us how much they appreciated this. We did also increase the book limit to 20 for our household members, and this is a big help to families who have multiple voracious readers in the home. Our total number of members as of this March is 3,074, and 551 of them are single memberships. We've also had very positive response to the introduction of a number of new databases in the last year, including the New York Review of Books Online Archive and the Electronic Reader's Guide Full Text. One of the real measures of collection depth in many types of libraries is the availability of journal and magazine collections through a computer terminal. From home and from the library, our members can now access over 1,000 scholarly journals through two services. The first one is JSTOR, Scholarly Journal Archive, and the second is Project Muse. Perhaps the major challenge of purchasing more electronic resources for this library is not just the funds involved, it's really deciding what appropriate sources we need to buy for our members and anticipating their intellectual needs, their educational needs, and whatever they need them for certain things that they're working on. I should note as well, the great pleasure of these journal archive databases is that the staff are very happy because it doesn't take up any shelf space at all, which is a big problem in the library right now in our stacks. Our children's library is alive and well. We've expanded children's service to 7 days a week by adding a children's assistant, Ingrid Abrams. She's a library school student at Queens College. This past year, Ingrid starred at a new story time for toddlers, and she also held the library's first ever theater workshop for older children, and it was called Theater on Your Toes. Our two children's librarians, Carrie Silberman and Randy Levy, welcomed 240 new families to their member register, and they circulated over 11,000 books, which is a notable 14% of our library's book circulation. Children's events continue to be very well attended, and we received over 150 entries for the Young Writers Awards last year. The next Young Writers Awards is scheduled for Thursday, May 8th. It's one of the events that I always try to attend every year. It's very exciting, so please come on May the 8th if you can. Events and programs are integral to the library, as Charles noted. I'm holding a document that I actually only received from Sarah a few weeks back. It's really fascinating. It's our all special events, spring 1994 through spring 2008, and it's multiple pages. The most interesting thing, I will leave it out on the table after my remarks, is the increase in events when you go back to the early years up to now. We are definitely a library that is doing a good job at moving ahead with events and programming. This November, we had almost 100 people packed into this room to hear Broadway and film veterans Kathleen Chalfont and Harris Yulin read Charmettre, a play by Peter Iyer based on the correspondence of Flaubert and George Sand. Dramatic and musical presentations have been our most consistently successful and praised events for some years, and we do really want to have an ongoing series combining great creative talent with programming that makes the most of our members' room. The other events that I would note this past year are the increasingly popular book discussion groups and play reading groups. Donald McDonough, a loyal library member, professor emeritus of English at Central Connecticut State University, started his reading groups back in 2004 with a class on Paradise Lost. This past year, he's had great success with The Odyssey and the Iliad, and as I've witnessed a number of times when the classes finish, members are very responsive and enthusiastic leaving the room. Rob Ackerman has also had a busy last year with us. He's had two seasons of play reading groups, and Carol Rial has had three sessions on genre-crossing authors. As usual, the library staff has had a very busy year attending some professional development workshops, conferences, and events here in the city. Randy Levy and Karen Fleshler attended the American Library Association annual conference in Washington. Carrie Silberman attended the Boston Globe Horn Book Awards that was held at the Athenaeum in Boston. Steve McGurl attended Book Expo here in the city. And a handful of staff attended day-long workshops here in New York, one of them entitled Google and Libraries. Our conservator, George Munoz, attended the disaster preparedness workshop in Andover, Massachusetts. And my assistant head librarian, Jane Goldstein, visited the San Francisco Mechanics Institute Library. I had the good fortune of traveling to California last fall to attend the membership libraries group meeting in La Jolla. And I also spent 2 days in Philadelphia just before Christmas visiting two of our sister institutions, the Library Company of Philadelphia, which is the oldest of the membership libraries, dating to 1731, and also the Athenaeum of Philadelphia. I came back from that trip with a very strong sense of how we are very similar to these two institutions, but we are also very, very different. In this past year, our trustees have been busy publishing. Lawrence Bergreen, who could not be with us tonight, published Marco Polo from Venice to Xanadu, and trustee Jenny Lawrence published the book that she edited, The Centennial History of the St. Urban, 285 Central Park West. Our list of members, member writer books, which we've given to you as a handout tonight, we've had 35 titles published in the last year, and that tradition of writing happening in this building is continuing. We've had many visitors to the library in the last year, and the list is much too long, but they've come from all corners of the world. They've come from library schools here in the city. They've come from other membership libraries in the country. And we've had visitors from England. Nicholas Barker, the scholar and editor of The Book Collector, was here in New York for two events. the launch of the book America's Membership Libraries at the Grolier Club, and also the following night he was here in the members' room. Charles noted the arrival of Joan, our great new director of development, who I've been really enjoying working with since January, and she's taking us to new heights in thinking about this part of the library. Harriet Shapiro, our exhibitions coordinator, who's great to have back in the library. Carolyn Waters, who started with us in January as a full-time acquisitions and reference librarian. And finally, Marty Seeger, our circulation assistant, who we just learned a few days ago is moving back to Boston and will be leaving shortly. I did tell you I wanted to look ahead and note a few things that I think we'll be busy with in the next couple of years. We will need to address the serious problem of our bursting collection. We have 2 years of growth room left in the building, and our options now are the standard options: offsite storage of parts of the collection, translating our electronic periodicals, our print periodicals and indexes into electronic versions, and we will also have to do some selective weeding, as the library has had to do through the years. We will be starting digital audio and video recording, which just happened this week, and we do really feel that building this collection, both for our current members and for future members of the library, is going to be very important. We will need to really be working diligently to fill the chairs at all of our library events, and I believe that a combination of the best kind of promotion and advertising that we can do and collaborating with some other institutions will take us to new heights in this area. I also hope that we can look at the issue of advertising our events through more than just our website, through looking at regular emails to members, noting what's happening in the coming week, to using what are called social networking sites like Facebook. We are actually working right now on some ideas for putting up a Facebook site to promote the library, as it is a means of communication that's being used by the younger generation. A practical reason for exploring these methods of communication is the cost savings. I have the fortune or misfortune every year of looking at printing costs and publishing costs, and they do go up. So every piece of paper that we issue and mail to people is costing us a lot. I do believe that the Member Relations Committee and the board and the staff will need to work together to complete a member survey in the next couple of years. It's been a few years since we've actually talked to our members about new directions in the library, and I think it's time to do a member survey. As Charles noted, we are working at increasing our annual appeal, and at the same time, I hope that we can make some progress with donor foundation and other forms of support to fund both our existing library operations and to help support some special projects and, of course, to support our much-needed renovation. I do also hope that we will start what we are tentatively calling the Good Hugh Society, which will be a society of members who have let us know their intentions, their bequest intentions, and we will explore other types of plan giving. I do also hope, and I've been in touch with a few of the what we're calling the younger members in the library, the under 45 age group, and I hope that we will be starting a younger members, young associates group with some social events that are planned by this age group, and will also help to identify some of the interests and needs of this age group. I have many, many, many people to thank, but I will just stop with a few final comments and thank the 35 members of the library staff and also our two volunteers, Ed May Wright, who's here tonight, and Jules Cohen, who I don't believe is with us tonight. I do believe that as a library, we are growing and improving, and I think the collaboration and communication continues to be quite healthy and dynamic in the library. I do really thank the trustees for their ongoing stewardship of the library, and as Charles noted, the chairs of our committees who help run the library. This year, we broke with tradition a little bit at this meeting, and we decided to invite all the committee members, and we have a few here tonight, and I acknowledge the committee members and thank them for their participation in the library. In his 1935 report at the annual general meeting, former Chairman Lewis Morris wrote, "The library has pursued its quiet policy of selective educational service rather than bigness. Its aim is to do things in a different and better way. I hope you agree that whether we satisfy the intellectual, educational, social, or recreational needs of our members, that we continue to do things in a different and a better way." Thank you. We have one more thing on the agenda. We have three 10-year service awards to give to three of our staff, who I believe are all here tonight, and Charles is going to handle the first one.
Okay, fine. Maybe before that, I would just follow the order of business here by declaring the polls closed and confirming that the ballots have been counted. Is that correct?
No, it's not. The ballots get counted
now. Oh, they get counted now. Okay. Okay, I thought we had done that. Very good. Well, in the meantime, I'm delighted to present this award to Ingrid Richter for 10 years' service to this institution and its members. Ingrid has been just tremendously energetic and creative and resourceful. Her presentation at the retreat that I mentioned earlier was just a total delight. I would like to read the inscription here. "Your talents and knowledge of technology are indispensable to the library. As the head of systems and as an instructor, you serve the members with unparalleled professionalism and enthusiasm. The board and staff salute you for your accomplishments and your vision." Thank you very much. I'll let Mark do the next honors here.
Our next award is for Susan Chan. Is Susan here this evening? Yes, she is. There she is. I'll read the inscription to Susan. "For 10 years of service to this institution and its patrons, 1998 through 2008. Offering your time and abilities so selflessly, you have provided this community of readers with a broad spectrum of services. Your talents and good sense of humor are an essential part of the circulation department." And I would like to highlight her good sense of humor. Susan is definitely one of our staff who brings a smile to the faces of both staff and members. The board and staff salute you for your enduring accomplishments and devotion.
And then finally, Endang Hurtanto, who is also celebrating her 10th anniversary. It's been a delight to get to know Endang these many years, and she has a very unassuming manner, I think it's fair to say, but she is so diligent and so helpful. We are most grateful, and I'll read the inscription here. "For 10 years of service to this institution and its patrons, your talents and grace are vital to the library's cataloging department. As a member of the public service staff, you serve the members with respect at both the reference and circulation desks. The board and staff salute you for your enduring accomplishments and devotion." Thank you. Very good. We have an overwhelming and I believe unanimous 73 ballots cast in favor of the entire slate. So I declare them elected and call for a motion to approve the acts and transactions of the Board of Trustees during the past year. This seems a bit presumptuous, but it's on the agenda here, so I would like such a motion, I guess. And second, all in favor? Any opposed? Very well. Well, thank you very much, and delighted you could all join us. Great.